Chapter 8. When someone's tongue swells up due to an allergic reaction, it is often difficult to understand what they are saying.
Bleu, 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 bleu,
Klaus said, as the three children got out of the taxi and headed toward the peeling white door of Aunt Josephine's house. I don't understand what you're saying, Violet said, scratching at a hive on her neck that was the exact shape of the state of Minnesota.
Bleu, 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 bleu,
Klaus repeated. Or perhaps he was saying something else. I haven't the faintest idea. Never mind, never mind, Violet said, opening the door and ushering her siblings inside. Now you have the time that you need to figure out whatever it is that you're figuring out.
Bleu, bleu, bleu,
Klaus blurred. I still can't understand you, Violet said. She took Sunny's coat off and then her own and dropped them both on the floor. Normally, of course, one should hang up one's coat on a hook or in a closet, but itchy hives are very irritating and tend to make one abandon such matters. I'm going to assume, Klaus, that you said something in agreement. Now, unless you need us to help you, I'm going to give Sunny and myself a baking soda bath to help our hives.
Bleh!
Sunny shrieked. She meant to shriek, Gons! Which meant something along the lines of, Good, because my hives are driving me crazy.
Bleh!
Klaus said, nodding vigorously, and he began hurrying down the hallway. Klaus had not taken off his coat, but it wasn't because of his own irritating allergic condition. It was because he was going someplace cold. When Klaus opened the door of the library, he was surprised at how much had changed. The wind from the approaching hurricane had blown away the last of the window, and the rain had soaked some of Aunt Josephine's comfortable chairs, leaving dark, spreading stains. A few books had fallen from their shelves and blown over to the window, where water had swollen them. There were few sights sadder than a ruined book. But Klaus had no time to be sad. He knew Captain Sham would come and retrieve the Baudelaires as soon as he could, so he had to get right to work. First, he took Aunt Josephine's note out of his pocket and placed it on the table, weighing it down with books so it wouldn't blow away in the wind. Then he crossed quickly to the shelves and began to scan the spines of the books, looking for titles. He chose three. Basic Rules of Grammar and Punctuation, Handbook for Advanced Apostrophe Use, and The Correct Spelling of Every English Word That Ever Existed. Each of the books was as thick as a watermelon, and Klaus staggered under the weight of carrying all three. With a loud thump, he dropped them on the table.
Blah, 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 blah,
he mumbled to himself, and found a pen and got to work. A library is normally a very good place to work in the afternoon, but not if its window has been smashed and there is a hurricane approaching. The wind blew colder and colder, and it rained harder and harder, and the room became more and more unpleasant. But Klaus took no notice of this. He opened all of the books and took copious, the word copious here means lots of, notes, stopping every so often to draw a circle around some part of what Aunt Josephine had written. It began to thunder outside, and with each roll of thunder the entire house shook, but Klaus kept flipping pages and writing things down. Then, as lightning began to flash outside, he stopped and stared at the note for a long time, frowning intently. Finally, he wrote two words at the bottom of Aunt Josephine's note, concentrating so hard as he did so that when Violet and Sunny entered the library and called out his name, he nearly jumped out of his chair.
Blur, surprise, blur!
He shrieked, his heart pounding and his tongue a bit less swollen. I'm sorry, Violet said. I didn't mean to surprise you.
Bleu, bleu, take a baking soda, bleu?
He asked. No, Violet replied, we couldn't take a baking soda bath. Aunt Josephine doesn't have any baking soda because she never turns on the oven to bake. We just took a regular bath. But that doesn't matter, Klaus. What have you been doing in this freezing room? Why have you drawn circles all over Aunt Josephine's note?
Bloody in grammar, he replied, gesturing to the books. Bleu,
Sunny shrieked, which probably meant gluh, which meant something along the lines of, why are you wasting valuable time studying grammar?
Because,
Klaus explained impatiently, I think Bleu Josephine left us a message in Bleu note. She was miserable and she threw herself out the window, Violet said, shivering in the wind. What other message could there be? There are too many grammatical mistakes in the Bleu, Klaus said. Aunt Josephine loved grammar and she'd never make that many mistakes unless she had a Bleu reason. So that's what I've been doing, blah, counting up the grammatical mistakes. Blah, Sunny said, which meant something along the lines of, please continue, Klaus. Klaus wiped a few raindrops off his glasses and looked down at his notes. Well, we already know that blah first sentence uses the wrong it.
I think that was to get our attention. But look at the second blutens. My heart is as cold as Ike, and I find life unbearable.
But the correct word is unbearable, Violet said. You told us that already.
But I think there's more, Klaus said. My heart is as cold as Ike doesn't sound right to me. Remember, Aunt Josephine told us Bla liked to think of her husband someplace very hot.
That's true, Violet said, remembering. She said it right here in this very room. She said Ike liked the sunshine, and so she imagined him someplace sunny.
So I think Aunt Blusophine meant cold as ice, Klaus said.
Okay, so we have ice and unbearable.
So far this doesn't mean anything to me, Violet said.
Me neither, Klaus said. But look at Bla next part.
I know your children may not understand the sad life of a dowager.
We don't have any children.
That's true, Violet said. I'm not planning to have children until I am considerably older.
So why would Aunt Josephine say your children? I think she meant you children.
And I looked up dowager in the correct spelling of every English word that ever existed.
Why? Violet asked.
You already know it's a fancy word for widow.
It is a bluncy word for widow, Klaus replied. But it's spelled D-O-W-A-G-E-R. Aunt Josephine added an extra D.
Cold as ice, Violet said, counting on her fingers. Unbearable, you children, and an extra D in dowager? That's not much of a message, Klaus.
Let me finish, Klaus said. I discovered even more griblutical mistakes.
When she wrote, or what would have leaded me to this desperate act, she meant, what would have led me, and the word act, of course, is spelled with a C.
Koik! Sonny shrieked, which meant, thinking about all this is making me dizzy.
Me too, Sonny, Violet said, lifting her sister up so she could sit on the table. But let him finish.
There are just blah more, Klaus said, holding up two fingers. One, she calls Captain Sham a kind and honorable man, when she should have said a kind and honorable man. And in the last sentence, Aunt Josephine wrote, please think of me kindly, even though I'd done this terrible thing. But according to the Handbook for Advanced Apostrophe Use, she should have written, even though I've done this terrible thing.
But so what? Violet asked. What do all these mistakes mean?
Klaus smiled and showed his sisters the two words he had written on the bottom of the note. Curdled cave, he read out loud.
Curdled veek? Sonny asked, which meant curdled what?
Curdled cave, Klaus repeated. If you take all the letters involved in the grammatical mistakes, that's what it spells. Look, C for ice instead of Ike, U for unbearable instead of unbearable, the extra R in your children instead of you children, and the extra D in dowager. LED for led instead of leaded, C for act instead of act, A for man instead of men, and VE for I've instead of I'd. That spells curdled cave. Don't you see? Aunt Josephine knew she was making grammatical errors, and she knew we'd spot them. She was leaving us a message, and the message is curdled.
A great gust of wind interrupted Klaus as it came through the shattered window and shook the library as if it were maracas, a word which describes rattling percussion instruments used in Latin American music. Everything rattled wildly around the library as the wind flew through it. Chairs and footstools flipped over and fell to the floor with their legs in the air. The bookshelves rattled so hard that some of the heaviest books in Aunt Josephine's collection spun off into puddles of rainwater on the floor. And the Baudelaire orphans were jerked violently to the ground as a streak of lightning flashed across the darkening sky.
"Let's get out of here!" Violet shouted over the noise of the thunder and grabbed her siblings by the hand. The wind was blowing so hard that the Baudelaires felt as if they were climbing an enormous hill instead of walking to the door of the library. The orphans were quite out of breath by the time they shut the library door behind them and stood shivering in the hallway.
"Poor Aunt Josephine," Violet said. "Her library is wrecked."
"But I need to go back in there," Klaus said, holding up the note. "We just found out what Aunt Josephine means by curdled cave, and we need a library to find out more."
"Not that library," Violet pointed out. "All that library had were books on grammar. We need her books on Lake Lacrimose."
"Why?" Klaus asked.
"Because I'll bet you anything that's where curdled cave is," Violet said, "in Lake Lacrimose. Remember she said she knew every island and its waters and every cave on its shore? I bet curdled cave is one of those caves."
"But why would her secret message be about some cave?" Klaus asked.
"You've been so busy figuring out a message," Violet said, "that you don't understand what it means. Aunt Josephine isn't dead. She just wants people to think she's dead. But she wanted to tell us that she was hiding. We have to find her books on Lake Lacrimose and find out where Curdled Cave is."
"But first we have to know where the books are," Klaus said. "She told us she hid them away, remember?" Sunny shrieked something in agreement, but her siblings couldn't hear her over a burst of thunder.
"Let's see," Violet said. "Where would you hide something if you didn't want to look at it?"
The Baudelaire orphans were quiet as they thought of places they had hidden things they did not want to look at, back when they had lived with their parents in the Baudelaire home. Violet thought of an automatic harmonica she had invented that made such horrible noises that she had hidden it so she didn't have to think of her failure. Klaus thought of a book on the Franco-Prussian War that was so difficult that he had hidden it so it was not to be reminded that he wasn't old enough to read it. And Sunny thought of a piece of stone that was too hard for even her sharpest tooth, and how she had hidden it so her jaw would no longer ache from her many attempts at conquering it. And all three Baudelaire orphans thought of the hiding place they had chosen.
"Underneath the bed," Violet said.
"Underneath the bed," Klaus agreed.
"Seek a yeet," Sunny agreed.
And without another word, the three children ran down the hallway to Aunt Josephine's room. Normally, it is not polite to go into somebody's room without knocking, but you can make an exception if the person is dead, or pretending to be dead, and the Baudelaires went right inside. Aunt Josephine's room was similar to the orphans, with a navy blue bedspread on the bed and a pile of tin cans in the corner. There was a small window looking out onto the rain-soaked hill, and a pile of new grammar books by the side of the bed that Aunt Josephine had not started reading, and, I'm sad to say, would never read. But the only part of the room that interested the children was underneath the bed, and the three of them knelt down to look there. Aunt Josephine, apparently, had plenty of things she did not want to look at anymore. Underneath the bed there were pots and pans, which she didn't want to look at because they reminded her of the stove. There were ugly socks somebody had given her as a gift that were too ugly for human eyes. And the Baudelaires were sad to see a framed photograph of a kind-looking man, with a handful of crackers in one hand, and his lips pursed as if he were whistling. It was Ike, and the Baudelaires knew that she had placed his photograph there because she was too sad to look at it. But behind one of the biggest pots was a stack of books, and the orphans immediately reached for it. "The Tides of Lake Lachrymose," Violet said, reading the title of the top book. "That won't help." "The Bottom of Lake Lachrymose," Klaus said, reading the next one. "That's not useful." "Lachrymose Trout," Violet read. "The History of the Damocles Dock Region," Klaus read. "Ivan Lachrymose, Lake Explorer," Violet read. "How Water is Made," Klaus read. "A Lachrymose Atlas," Violet said.
"Atlas, that's perfect," Klaus cried. "An atlas is a book of maps."
There was a flash of lightning outside the window, and it began to rain harder, making a sound on the roof like somebody was dropping marbles on it. Without another word, the Baudelaires opened the atlas and began flipping pages. They saw map after map of the lake, but they couldn't find Curdled Cave.
"This book is 478 pages long," Klaus exclaimed, looking at the last page of the atlas. "It'll take forever to find Curdled Cave."
"We don't have forever," Violet said. "Captain Sham is probably on his way here now. Use the index in the back. Look under Curdled." Klaus flipped to the index, which I'm sure you know is an alphabetical list of each thing a book contains and what page it's on. Klaus ran his finger down the list of the C words, muttering out loud to himself. "Carp Cove, Chartreuse Island, Cloudy Cliffs, Condiment Bay, Curdled Cave. Here it is, Curdled Cave, page 104. Quickly, Klaus flipped to the correct page and looked at the detailed map. "Curdled Cave, Curdled Cave, where is it?"
"There it is."
Violet pointed a finger at the tiny spot on the map marked Curdled Cave.
"Directly across from Damocles Dock and just west of the Lavender Lighthouse. Let's go."
"Go?" Klaus said. "How will we get across the lake?"
"The Fickle Ferry will take us," Violet said, pointing at a dotted line on the map.
"Look, the ferry goes right to the Lavender Lighthouse and we can walk from there."
"We're going to walk to Damocles Dock in all this rain?" Klaus asked.
"We don't have any choice," Violet answered. "We have to prove that Aunt Josephine is still alive, or else Captain Sham gets us."
"I just hope she is still," Klaus started to say, but he stopped himself and pointed out the window. "Look!"
Violet and Sunny looked. The window in Aunt Josephine's bedroom looked out onto the hill, and the orphans could see one of the spidery metal stilts that kept Aunt Josephine's house from falling into the lake. But they could also see that this stilt had been badly damaged by the howling storm. There was a large black burn mark, undoubtedly from lightning, and the wind had bent the stilt into an uneasy curve. As the storm raged around them, the orphans watched the stilt struggle to stay attached.
"Tafka!" Sunny shrieked, which meant, "We have to get out of here right now!"
"Sunny's right," Violet said. "Grab the atlas and let's go." Klaus grabbed a Lachrymose atlas, not wanting to think what would be happening if they were still leafing through the book and had not looked up at the window. As the youngsters stood up, the wind rose to a feverish pitch,
a phrase which here means it shook the house and sent all three orphans toppling to the floor. Violet fell against one of the bedposts and banged her knee. Klaus fell against the cold radiator and banged his foot. And Sunny fell into a pile of tin cans and banged everything. The whole room seemed to lurch slightly to one side as the orphans staggered back to their feet. "Come on!" Violet screamed and grabbed Sunny. The orphans scurried out to the hallway and toward the front door. A piece of the ceiling had come off, and rainwater was steadily pouring onto the carpet, splattering the orphans as they ran underneath it. The house gave another lurch, and the children toppled to the floor again. Aunt Josephine's house was starting to slip off the hill. "Come on!" Violet screamed again, and the orphans stumbled up the tilted hallway to the door, slipping in puddles and on their own frightened feet. Klaus was the first to reach the front door, and yanked it open as the house gave another lurch, followed by a horrible, horrible crunching sound. "Come on!" Violet screamed again, and the Baudelaires crawled out of the door and onto the hill, huddling together in the freezing rain. They were cold, they were frightened, but they had escaped. I have seen many amazing things in my long and troubled life history. I have seen a series of corridors built entirely out of human skulls. I have seen a volcano erupt and send a wall of lava crawling toward a small village. I have seen a woman I loved picked up by an enormous eagle and flown to its high mountain nest. But I still cannot imagine what it was like to watch Aunt Josephine's house topple into Lake Lacrimose. My own research tells me that the children watched in mute amazement as the peeling white door slammed shut and began to crumple, as you might crumple a piece of paper into a ball. I have been told that the children hugged each other even more tightly as they heard the rough and ear-splitting noise of their home breaking loose from the side of the hill. But I cannot tell you how it felt to watch the whole building fall down, 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 and hit the dark and stormy waters of the lake below.